You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and A-Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, their ZDX is the most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast with me, Robbie Musto, and him, Robbie Earle. And this is our final World Cup special podcast. And we have a winner, Robbie Earle, my friend.
Yes,
it's France. France
yes,
beat Croatia 4-2 in the World Cup final on Sunday. Another excellent game. Lots of drama. Lots of things to talk about. But France are champions. What's your immediate reaction to that?
Well done to France. We questioned, Rob, whether... I don't think anybody questioned the ability. We questioned whether this can be a team, whether they can come together, what can they be giving to each other. Can they stand each other's company for 6-7 weeks, as you have to in World Cup competition? Can they find a way, answer questions and mature and grow up? The answer is yes. And just on the opposite, and this takes absolutely nothing away from the French victory, I also felt, Rob, more as the game went on, but even before the game kicked off, and we did the last podcast, and I said, I fancied France to get a few goals. I just felt that this might be a game too far for Croatia. Partly in terms of physicality, just what they've been through over the last 7-10 days with extra time, with penalty play, kick, penalty kicks, the emotion that happens physically and more so mentally. I just thought if this team go behind, I'm not sure how they pull themselves out. And I think a couple of times yesterday, having started the game really well and having good possession, when they went to the well, unfortunately, it was a little bit dry. It just, I thought the tournament caught up with a team and a nation that's not as deep, that's not as much quality as France. And French, quite rightly, were crowned champions.
Yeah, I think the part, the French part, I think is well said. I think we question whether they could be a great team, basically, that they are great individuals. And I think we question that because we had seen that before. Of course, in Euro 2016, they lost the final to Portugal in home, their own stadium. And you just, whether they've learned lessons, I don't know. But they really did come together. The managers continued in Didier Deschamps. And there's no question they deserve to win the game. And I'm not sure. I think Croatia, they didn't have to play some good stuff, Rob. I mean, I know your point is that did it all come, you know, become too much for them with all these extra time and penalties and drama and emotion and being the same guys, not a particularly deep squad. I still thought they played really well. And we'll get into the main incidents.
Yeah, the details of the game, yeah.
I think that really, it really affected it. I thought it really affected the
details game. Of the game.
Yeah.
I don't disagree. I think my argument would be if this game was played, let me just say in a week's time, I think we could have a different result.
Yeah. Wow, yeah. I mean, if they played this game, Rob, if they played this game...
I think France would want to do the same and not be too dissimilar to how it played.
Absolutely.
And I think Croatia could be better, could have given a little more, could have been mentally stronger or whatever was required in a few things. And I know we'll get and we'll start to get into the detail because that does have its bearing on some of those things. But that mental emotional drain in football is difficult to explain, Rob, but we've all been there, whether it's losing in a big match or going in big games. Sometimes your energy levels just for some reason take 2 or 3 days to
final,
come together.
Rob, and I know what you mean, in a World Cup final, crikey, I know... You know, mentality-wise, I mean, it's the biggest game
so
to get up for.
You can only try so hard.
Yeah, and your body can only do so much.
When the body's sort of saying, listen, I've been there before, I'm shot, I just wonder whether 3-4 more days of rest might have given Croatia a chance, but that's slightly doing a disservice to France. And we probably should get into the detail, mate, because there was plenty of goals, plenty of incident, plenty to go on. Should we start with the first
free
goal?
Kick. Yeah.
17 minutes, free kick. Griezmann goes down, gets a free kick. Debate was raging, certainly over Twitter and the places I was watching the game. Some people were adamant it wasn't a free kick, that he dived, which we've probably seen a little bit of that in the tournament, something we haven't particularly liked. I actually thought there was enough contact for him to go down. I think when you're running at that speed and somebody catches you, I was okay with a free kick.
You know what? I think when we have the benefit of the replays. You know, he was going down a little bit. The contact came. It's one of them. It's a soft free kick, but it's not a huge injustice.
No, it's not a game changer. Yeah.
There's a lot of things that happen in 90 minutes of football that are kind of marginal. It's all about interpretation, referees, viewing position, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's not a reviewable situation with VAR. So, like you, it was just a little bit of bad luck, basically. And Griezmann got away with it. He knew what he was doing there. I just thought he was leaning over Rob, and the contact came.
Yeah, he's hoping to make the contact. He's going down. The contact sort of comes, and
that's the 17th minute. You know that, and of course it was the French first goal with Mandzukic. Own goal there in the 18th minute.
The only thing I would say on that, Rob, because I just want to make a point. As they're taking the free kick, as I'm standing there with a couple of mates, I say, aren't Croatia so deep? They were right on the six-yard box. And just the distance from the ball to the back line looked too far to me, as if, like, push up 3 or 4 yards, at least make this a little bit more difficult. Whether that would have changed things, whether the goalkeeper could have come, whether Mandzukic would have been higher up and the ball would have gone through, who knows? But just, you know, when you're visually watching something, I thought, God, they're back forward deep there. They're almost on the six-yard box.
I looked as well, and I that's a great point, and I totally agree. Paul Pogba was in an offside position. And he kind of challenged for the ball behind Mandzukic. Now, there was a little bit of contact. You know, we've seen these where he's interfering with play there because he challenged for the ball from an offside position. Now, again, I looked at it a few times, and I'm probably okay with it that it was allowed, because I'm not sure. Because he was behind the play and behind the player that flicked it on. I don't know whether he affected him.
Was he in his eye line? Was he affected by the player?
But there was quite a bit of talk on it on social media. I thought about it because I've looked at replay and said, well, hang on a minute. Pogba was definitely offside.
Yeah.
And, he does go and try and play the ball. He's challenging for the ball. But maybe because he came from behind, you know, again, a little bit like the free kick.
Yeah.
That's okay. That's an expected sort of situation with refereeing, with a little bit of grey area. That's okay.
This is going to be a long old podcast if we're going through every goal.
No, we're not.
But let's go on to the goal. Let's go on to the equalising goal at 28 minutes, which has little to debate. An absolute brilliant strike by Perisic. Takes a touch off his right foot onto his left. Beautiful control technique.
He's a good player.
I mean, what a player. He's one of those players, Rob, who's elevated his world standing over this World Cup.
He has. I think he would say, and others might say, well, he's got a pretty good standing anyway.
But I think people who don't know the game that well, I mean, there's talk of Manchester United have been interested.
But they've been for a long time.
Again,
I think Jose's after it.
Correct.
But from a wide position, and what I'd say about him for the Premier League, Rob, he's really built for the Premier League because he's a bit of a specimen. He's physical.
He's a beast out there, isn't he?
He works hard. Working in the Premier League, you got to be able to work hard. Yeah. You've got to be mentally tough. I think we know that all these Croatian players are.
Yeah.
And you've got to have quality. I think, you know, he's a player that absolutely would fit into the Premier League
Jose's style as well. Don't mind doing his work back, but real
great finish, wasn't it? It was a
good finish.
Good
position. Yeah. So that's 1-1. Perisic was involved in probably, I think, the most controversial moment of the game, which could well have been a game changer when you think of how the match played out. We come to the corner kick. We come to the handball situation. We come to VAR, Rob, which we all talked about in this tournament. And we've said a number of times on the podcast how pleased we've been that it's been anything, how well it's worked, how it's given the referee opportunities. And more often than not, we feel it's aided getting the right decision in the crucial moment. So. Yeah. Yeah. We're in a World Cup final. This is absolutely where you want to make sure that it's right, because these are
critical,
life-changing, huge-changing situations. So we get the Perisic handball.
Which
the
was
referee,
no call in the game.
The referee, right. He's obviously got the French players all surround him, start pointing to the hand. Giroud led the argument. He's obviously heard in the earpiece, and then we see the sort of the usual sign now for the VAR. He's going to the sideline, which is great because we've seen a couple of situations where the referee hasn't actually gone up to the sideline. He goes to the sideline, reviews it, Rob, and then from there on in, I thought. I'm not sure whether VAR fails or the referee fails, but from the moment he looked at the pictures, Rob, I thought the referee was uncomfortable looking at the pictures. He was like he was twitchy. He didn't quite know what to do. He was looking around. It was almost like he forced himself to say, actually, just because it's hit his hand and I'm having another look in slow-mo and people upstairs are telling me I'm going to give a penalty kick.
I think the first thing, just to rewind a little bit for what VAR is all about and what it's designed to do, is to reverse or to stop clear and obvious errors.
Yeah.
So the VAR referees sat in wherever they are, in Moscow somewhere, they would have seen that and thought, that's an obvious error. Please,
The referee hasn't seen it, hasn't it, I assume? Or that he's seen it and he didn't think it was a penalty kick?
Right, so I think it's wise if they say, "Listen, I think
you need to look at it."
You need to look at it. I mean, I don't like them getting involved in the game unless they think it's an obvious error,
isn't it?
Yeah, you don't want to re-referee a game, and that's what for me that's what happened. Mm. This is a re-refereeing situation. Mm. Maybe he didn't get a good view of it, and it happened real quick.
Okay,
but I still think as he goes over and all the replays that we saw from many angles. And of course, he gave the no call. So unless it's an obvious error, then that no call should stand on the field. And for him to look at it again on the on the screen, on the side of the pitch, which is under massive pressure, I was still very surprised that he thought that he had made a huge error by saying that's not a deliberate handball. And I think it's important to say, Rob, that the VAR, this isn't... There's lots of stuff on social media about it. This is about the referees here. This is about the humans. This isn't about the system. The system works fine.
The system worked,
and it worked great.
Absolutely, system. That's
but it's the people. It's the guys in the room, and it's the referee. Yeah. And what it does more than anything else, Rob. Okay, for me, this one is less about the VAR system, and it's about the law of handball. And the times when we have disagreed with some of the decisions, there was an early one, wasn't it? It was a Portugal game, wasn't it? To go 1-1, or there was a handball given through VAR. That's he's just heading it onto. He doesn't. That's not a deliberate handball. So the deliberate handball is something that we've on our shows doing the Premier League, and it's interpreted differently in different countries by different referees.
Yeah.
And it's funny because on Twitter, I put out on my own feed, like that's letter crap. That's not a clear and obvious error. That's not a deliberate handball. His hand is in a natural expected position given the situation. He's jumping. Yeah. He's off balance a little bit. I mean, it's very, very harsh. And yet a lot of the European or maybe our English followers would say, yeah, absolutely right. And all the UK pundits on UK TV, Rob said it was ridiculous. But then the US followers, like, no, it's hit his hand. It was going through. It's a clear handball.
Interpretation
is very different.
But and I think you've hit a good point. I just want to go back to it because I think the VAR thing is important and that it has been a step forward and that we should be thinking about integrating it more into top level football. And I go back to the point you made. The system worked in that the referee was asked to look at the situation.
Okay.
The bit that I think we've got to be careful of is I thought the referee changed his mind, A, because of the pressure that seemed on him on that big decision, almost like, look at it, you know, almost like...
What, you think more than he thought it was handball?
More than he thought it was handball. And the second thing, Rob, that it came out to me, that was so much of this is about the personality of a referee. And if the personality of the referee is not strong, you know, I've seen that. I'll look again. I'm okay with my first decision. I think that takes quite a strong-minded, independent
type referee. This is the ref. This is the World Cup
final. They are, but some of these guys are not at that level. Believe me, Rob.
But it's the World Cup final. It should be the best guy.
I know it's one of the things that FIFA do. But is he? Did he control the game? Was he totally in control of himself and that situation? I don't think so. And that's where VAR... I think on that kind of personality, on sometimes a referee who's not quite sure of all the rules, etc., I think it almost doesn't help those kind of guys. I think if you're Clattenburg, if you're Webb, if you're Cleanham, if you're one of those guys who has a look, okay, I'll have a look. No, I'm okay with my first decision. I think you're fine. But I think if you're a referee not at quite that standing, not with quite that own self kind of belief in what you do, I think we'll get I think that's why we got situations like we did yesterday, and we end up getting a wrong decision even though the system was right.
The only other thing to add on that, right, and we can't profess to think we know everything about the rules, right? I think we're both humble enough to say, you know what, maybe we're wrong. Mm-hmm. Maybe we're wrong interpretations. Maybe, you know, this deliberate part, I mean, it's in the laws there, so I know it's there. And it's got to be. But maybe he looked at it on a monitor. Maybe we're wrong, Rob. Maybe Europe is wrong. Maybe England is wrong. Maybe we're wrong. That is a handball because his arms aren't closer to his side.
Again, maybe, but it doesn't. When you say, when we go down the laws of the game, the clear and obvious error, when you see the referee having a look and you're saying to me that whether it's deliberate or not, but there's a movement of the hand towards the ball's in his arms in an unexpected position, I think when you put all that criteria to what we're supposed to see as a penalty or not, I think that stands up, Rob. I think it stands up that should not be given as a penalty kick.
Yeah, the only law in this law is it has to be deliberate, and everything else is just to help you make that determinant, like a natural position, distance from the ball. These are all things that are used to help you figure out was that deliberate, because sometimes players are very clever, they're very smart, they can make themselves bigger to potentially handle the ball. That's deliberate. But this, for me, was absolutely not. He's jumping. His arms aren't, there needs to be something else. Like if your hand is above your shoulder.
Yeah, above your head or your shoulder
something,
or out
something
away from
else
your body.
That's a bit more measurable, some metric. Mm. That handball law, and it happened before, I'm sure it was a Portugal game. There was one given and then the one that wasn't given.
Yeah,
was given,
headed it
hand
down, didn't they? Yeah.
Please, FIFA and the people that organise, think about handball because it keeps cropping up. And really, to move on from that now, Rob, it was for me the defining moment in this final.
It was a puncture, wasn't it? It was a puncture to the Croatia team.
And then they're behind. They're having to attack a lot more.
Yeah.
And it was perfect for France with the players that they've got on the counter-attack and their quality that they had. And again, this doesn't take anything away from France. Over the course of that game, you can't say that France didn't deserve to win it, but that their decision. Wow, you talk about mental toughness, Rob, and this Croatia team has had a lot of stuff to get over that as well. Was really difficult.
It was, and they were made to pay even further just before the hour mark, and Paul Pogba got his moment of, I'm calling it his moment of redemption, when I still heard some pundits in the UK around the world critical of him, that he tried his first shot with the right foot, that he's trying to nutmeg someone instead of, I thought this was a little bow to a two-footed footballer of immense ability, shot one shot with his right foot, comes on his left, comfortable to bend it in with his left. That this wasn't about haircuts, hair colour, dabbing, dancing, showboating, social media. This was about a guy who'd had disciplined, quite defensive midfield role for long periods of the game.
One of two in there,
Played a striking ball forward to launch the attack, followed it up with a run to the edge of the box, takes one shot with his right foot, shoots his next shot with his left foot. I think the first goal scored outside the box in World Cup football since that great Marco Tardelli moment. Remember Italy when Tardelli scores them out and we see the brilliant celebrations? I mean, a goal of real quality, a goal of some historical value. And I thought it was a great moment for Paul Pogba to say, that's kind of who I am. That's who I can be. That's what I can do. Despite all this kind of negativity that seems to follow him and run with him, and almost like people are desperate for this guy to fail now.
But I think, to be fair, Rob, right? And I think we know he can score goals like that. Okay, so the negativity and the little bit of pressure and the criticism he gets isn't for those moments and for spraying that ball and for bending in his left foot, right? I think we all know he can do that. What impressed me is that he showed in this game, and in others in the World Cup, to be fair, that he can be a central midfield, in inverted commas, general. So he can do a bit of everything, which is what Jose Mourinho wants and other people want from him. He played as a fancy word is a double pivot. Two central guys in midfield. They're kind of a 4-4-2, a little bit lopsided, but he was there. So in that role, and we both played that role, so we know it very well, you've got to defend. You've got to track runners. You've got to close the board down. You've got to block. You've got to pass. And the crucial bit for him, you can get forward and score and create. And I'm saying, be that guy, Paul Pogba. Be that guy. Don't be the guy that everybody's going to say, you know what, he needs to play in the left of a three in midfield because you've got to give him the license to get forward and do his stuff. And yes, in the right team, in the right situation, in a dominant Juventus side, he can be that guy and he can do the flashy stuff. But for the most part, it's to win the best stuff, whether it's in the Premier League, that's a tough competitive league, or in a World Cup. If you're a midfield player, you got to do a bit of everything. And he showed in that game that he did. Now, he wasn't incredibly outstanding, but he showed to me that he can be that all-rounder. And that's what Mourinho wants. And that, I think, with some picky pundit midfield players want to see him be that guy. And I think this tournament, whether he's matured, whether he's got something from Deschamps that he hasn't got from Mourinho, he showed he can do that. And I think that's the kind of the biggest takeaway for Paul Pogba. Don't be a fancy Dan, specific type of guy. Be an all-rounder because you've got everything to be able to be a star midfield general.
I absolutely get you, and I think we're probably making the same point, but coming up from different angles. What I'm saying is, this guy seems to get criticised way more above what's necessary than other players in similar situations. You make a great point that the Paul Pogba finish is something we know he can do because he's got great football. Yeah.
And he gets criticism because of his fee. It's a massive fee, wasn't it?
Yeah, but. Let's go beyond. The fee's done now. Neymar's fee was big, and all, you know, everybody who moves, the fee is big.
Yeah.
But you know, there seems to be the hair or the social media or the this or the that. You make a great point where you say that ball rolls to him on the edge of the box, and we know he can bend it in, and he does, and he scores in a World Cup final. So there's a little bit of pressure. Mm. Jesse Lingard got a ball in a very similar situation for England in the game against Croatia on the edge of the box. When we know what you can do for Manchester United, he put it probably closer to the corner flag, but probably stretching the point a little bit, than he did to the goal. So I'm saying to you that it's not quite as easy as a given that what people do in club football and what they can do. So I'm just trying to maybe elevate his finish a little bit. But the bigger point, and the point you make, is that when he, for whatever, if I'm a Manchester United fan watching the game yesterday, And you make a very good point in terms of this is who Paul Pogba's got to be. Mm. My question is, why is he not that guy for us?
Yeah.
That's what I want to know, because that guy can help us win the title. He just helped France win a World Cup. That guy can help Manchester United win a title. Can probably go forward four or five times a game, as he did. And make it important. Can sit in there. Can enjoy look like he's enjoying doing that defensive shape with a two or with a three.
Yeah,
he almost was like a third centre back at times. He dropped in there and had it and shielded and looked like he was doing. So what's different than club football, where he's playing with his mates, should be people he should enjoy on a brilliant stage every week. Manchester United, the biggest ticket in town. Why is that not happening at Manchester United?
Well, I think. It's a brilliant point, and I think it's going to be obviously fascinating to watch it unfold now, because we've all seen what he can do, what he's capable of, and doing something that, to be fair, I think Jose Mourinho has wanted him to do, and he hasn't done it. Mm. Now, if he goes back to Man United, and there's talk, by the way, I mean, it's only rumours and hearsay in the paper that he wants to move, but assuming that he stays at United, then there should be no reason why he doesn't perform like that for Manchester United. No reason. The only reason can be, if he doesn't, it has to be the manager. It has to be the manager. And again, if we saw Paul Pogba going being brilliant in an attacking role, then I'd be like, well, yeah, it's tough because Jose doesn't want him to do that. But he played a role for France there that Mourinho does want him to play, and he hasn't been able to do it. So I would be on the positive for this, Rob, and that Paul Pogba, over this tournament, has learnt now. He's got the words of Mourinho in the back of his head.
Yeah.
Maybe Deschamps has said, listen, Paul, we all love the four bit, but you've got to be more of a reliable midfield player. Maybe the penny's dropped, and maybe we're going to see that guy. If we don't, I'm afraid it comes down to relationship, and it absolutely does. Don't forget about
you know, the style or the, he is in a situation where he can do that with a manager that wants him to do that. Mm-hmm. It will be about his relationship with Jose Mourinho and the way that he treats him, talks to him, you know, benches him, pulls him off, whatever it is. It's all about that relationship now. We've seen what he can do in a side of the game that, that we, I wasn't sure he could do it. He showed us now in the World Cup that he can.
Absolutely. One player who we know can do things is a young 19-year-old, Kylian Mbappe, who just keeps taking things in his stride. Wonderful sort of counter-attack, one-touch strike finish by him. Puts France 4-1 up. I mean, just... I was thinking as I was watching the game, Robin, my mind took me back to 20 years ago, actually, and it's a comparison. I don't particularly like making comparisons of young players, but just a situation with the original Ronaldo in the World Cup final, Brazil v France. And do you remember the day when he was on the team sheet? He was off the team sheet. He was on the team sheet. There was talk that he'd had some kind of
mental thing,
health breakdown. Issue or, kind of hyperventilating, that it was too so such a big moment. Didn't really impact the game that much on the day. But he was the bright star. He was going to be the superstar. And then you see Mbappe, who's just got looks like a very laid-back manner, you know, comes up with, you know, there's some things that this kid does just of brilliance. I thought once or twice yesterday he showed a little bit of immaturity and maybe gave the ball away in situations that he'll get better as he gets older. But it just reminded me of that situation with the old Ronaldo. And in 20 years, we could well be looking back at one of the superstars if he can develop at that level. I mean, it's high praise indeed. But, you know, on that similar stage, Mbappe just looks like he's got the personality and the acceptance of what he is and what he's going to become.
Yeah, 19-year-old that scores 4 World Cup goals and he's a world champion. That's a pretty amazing start for him. And just as you're talking there, Rob, it's like he's a smiler, isn't he? The pressure, but he loves football. I think he knows he's got an amazing talent. He knows he's got this amazing pace that scares everybody. He knows that, and he's comfortable with it, and he enjoys it. Like you, there's some times you're like, oh, yeah, probably shouldn't have done that, or we need to come out. But that's decision making, and that will improve. But it's exciting, and I think we knew what this is not as though he's coming from nowhere, by the way. We know what he's been in French football for Monaco and now at PSG, where his numbers haven't been ridiculous, but there's other factors with Neymar, et cetera, at that club that makes it maybe difficult. There's no question he is going to be one of the next world superstars when Messi and Ronaldo maybe just starting to show signs of fading a little bit. He is going to be one of those guys. And I'm so pleased for him that he got his goal. I mean, again, that pace, that skill, the little flashes we've seen in this tournament is pretty stunning. And, we'll go on to talk about the awards that were given out. But he certainly deserved his award and had another great game. And what, you know, French football, they don't have to develop a lot of players, Rob. You know, you sort of think about different nations, and we talk the Dutch or the Italians, but the French over a longer period of time seem to me to create brilliant players, outstanding technical players. Whether it's how far you Platinis to Zidanes and, you know, everybody else that's come through.
Is it Clairefontaine and the development of the young talents there and how they come through and go through the ranks and they get them in teams early and they play.
They play football a lot.
And technically and tactically. It's fascinating that the amount of quality that comes in. And in the end, that collective quality and a little bit of spirit and organisation by the manager was enough to get them through. I mean, quick moment, Hugo Lloris, moment of madness really in a World Cup final. Yeah. Wasn't too costly in the end, but tries to go around Mandzukic pokes one in and gets a 4-2, but never really in doubt even at that stage. There wasn't enough time on the clock.
Yeah, no, it's just a rare error from him. Who had a really good tournament. And it gave, I guess it's 69 minutes, I think it was, that goal. It gave them a little bit of a thought of can we make something happen here? But maybe the point that you made, they just run out of the steam a little bit. So that was it. That was the World Cup final, 4-2 to France, world champions again, as they were in 1998 when they hosted the tournament. Brilliant for them.
Just a word on Didier Deschamps, Rob.
Yeah, Didier Deschamps, just going to go to him.
I mean, came into this tournament with many suggesting with Zinedine Zidane sort of out of Real Madrid and people talking whether he goes into club football or maybe he's waiting for the national job. If he is, I mean, Zidane's not timed that one very well. For once, the great man's timing's a little bit off. But certainly, there was a little bit of pressure on Deschamps, I think, in terms of, you say, the Euro final, losing to Portugal, the talent that's available to him. People were expecting, I think, at least quarters, semis, and then, you know, we'll take it from there. They've gone one step further. They've got the big one. They've landed it again 20 years later. There's a lot of young talent in that group, Rob. I was looking through the squad list. And there's a lot of 22, 23-year-old players there.
They're going to be back again.
You know, the next 4 or 5 years, again, Euros and then World Cups. In Qatar, they're going to be in contention, and if Deschamps decides and is able to stay around, could have saw one of those sort of golden generations again that we saw a little bit by France, then Spain, then Germany, and then, you know, French could be back in there again.
Yeah, I think so. And on the manager, I think the main criticism for Deschamps was is kind of defensive nature. Pragmatism, you know, that was a little bit of, you know, all these attacking players, and yet you bore everybody a little bit. Well, I think what we've seen in this tournament is that to win, you know, you've got to have a little balance there. You've got to have a little balance of defensive kind of focus and attacking flair. And I think, you know, as an overriding theme of the whole World Cup, France were the best at that. I mean, there's teams that maybe got more talent, and, you know, not many, but in the, like your Brazil team that have got a lot of kind of. You know, and we both thought they were going to win it with the balance of defending players and attacking players, but it wasn't to be. You know, Belgium, lots of other teams that have got great kind of team parts, but not the whole collective like France had managed to do with attacking and defending and being together. So, yeah, well done, Deschamps. Well done, France. World Cup champions.
The only poor performance, actually, from the French, Rob, was after the game when they usually tend to do that well, that kind of bumping the manager, throwing him up in the air and... Remember Aimé Jacquet when they won with Brazil, and, you know, they're tossing him like 10 foot in the air, the players, and shouting "Olé, Olé!" And like they shan't really, they couldn't get him like, you know, 6 inches above their head. unless Didier's put a bit of timber on. I was wondering, like, is he a little bit heavy or something?
It was good though. It was great to watch those.
And that was one of the things that stood out to me. Relationships with players now, Rob, are so important. And you go back to the Pogba thing and whether Mourinho's the right man and his man management and his style. But nowadays, you see managers and these young millennial players who are a different type of animal. You've got to have a relationship with them. And there's absolutely no doubt that Deschamps has got a really great relationship with some of these young superstars.
Yeah, when you're a star player, I guess it's finally on this, and you're a multi-millionaire footballer that could go and play in different clubs, I'm afraid the manager has to bend to that sort of player. I mean, you've got to find a way of getting them on board with what you're trying to do. And then get him to do things that maybe he wouldn't, they wouldn't normally do. If you do it in a way, and maybe we're seeing this with Jose Mourinho a little bit with Paul Pogba, where it's a real hard discipline. Like, you do this, or I'm gonna publicly criticise you. I'm gonna drag you off. I'm gonna bench you. That maybe is where the game has changed. Where these guys are so popular, so wealthy, so in demand, it's tough to follow through with that as a way of getting them to do what you want them to do. Interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go on to the trophies, the tournaments, awards that were handed out for the 2018.
What about the third place game, Rob? Do you want to do that?
Do you want to go there first? Yeah. Okay.
Let's do the football, then finish up the awards and stuff.
It's a game nobody really wants to be in. Some suggested it would be England B against Belgium B again, a rematch of the game from the group stage. Wasn't the case.
A little bit. I mean, England five changes.
Yeah, but I think both teams went with the right mentality. Yeah. Certainly, the Belgium team. I think wanted to finish off on a high. Roberto Martinez saying that his team deserved that. In football terms, Rob, I thought it was a showing of Belgium a further down the road than this England team.
Yeah.
More ability, better team unit, probably played better football at the moment. A little bit for England to learn from. Obviously, a difficult one for England. I think disappointment of not getting to the final, obviously. Few changes with personnel maybe sometimes makes you a little bit disjointed as well. It was one of those games where I found it a little bit difficult to watch in that it, I, kind of knew quite early how it was going to go, and it was not going to be an England victory. And anything from that was almost like, let's get this over with, let's do what we got to do, and you know, let's get out of here.
I think so. I think the difference was two players, and I think we know who they are, and I think that's the theme that we've talked about a lot. I think the best two teams in the tournament are Belgium and France in terms of attacking balance and everything else. Hazard and Kevin De Bruyne are just that sprinkle of quality that we talked about in the last pod that England don't quite have. They are brilliant, brilliant footballers. Hazard is a magnificent player. Maybe the only criticism, he should get more goals with that ability. I thought those two were the difference. Other than that, you can go through the 11, and I don't think there's a great deal of difference. I really don't. But what they have are these two star players. They take the lead early. They're happy to sit back. I thought England, you know, had some possession. But I always got a sense if it got to 1-1, then Belgium would step up again. And maybe you're right. Maybe it is because they're further along. I would tend to go with going forward, and I think what Gareth Southgate's done with England, and it's been great to see, and the England fans have loved it, is that they've played as we know they can play. And I can't remember the last time, Rob, how many times have we seen England, we're like, well, hang on a minute, you know, Gerrard or Lamb or Rooney or they're better than that, they're better than this. I think we saw the England team as it is. We saw the bits that Lingard and Dele can do. We saw Henderson, some good moments, some poor moments, some good defending, some bad. Kane with some lots of goals, with some disappointing build-up play in general, missed some big chances, which I guess we'd normally see. So maybe you could say that Kane, you'd expect him to score that goal against Croatia to go 2-0.
But in
general, that's what's good about it. What England need to think about for the next 2 years, for the Euros and then the next 4 years, is how can we produce a De Bruyne or a Hazard or like a David Silva or a Blimmin. Yeah. I mean, these guys that sprinkle their quality in a team, you know, because we've got plenty of that in England. We've got plenty of organisation and work ethic and all that and physicality.
Yeah.
We need some star ability.
Yeah.
And that's, in this game, I thought was obvious again.
Yeah, I think we hit a similar point. I thought the two things that came out of the game for me was some of the scenes after was the reconnection with the England fans and the England team, which I think is heartening, which I think is so, so important. I think if you think back, having at the end of the game, Gareth Southgate celebrating his teams, just think of Gareth and what people have done at St George's and the whole setup. We're now in a system where from U17s through, we've got national teams who've had success. So there's a platform there to a group, Rob, where you look on the pitch, and I talked about the French team. There's a lot of 20-somethings in that group as well. So there's a group that's there. There's some that are coming through from the system. I've written exactly the same thing in terms of final thoughts for England over the tournament. England have to develop that ball-playing, technical footballer.
This is my big point.
There's two things that I feel are really important. Who can be allowed to be different, Rob? Who coaches are not going to be, if this kid's at 14 or 15, is not going to keep telling him about getting behind the ball. Kevin De Bruyne sometimes plays and thinks and acts in a different way than the other players. That's why he's that player. And coaches have a responsibility, English coaches who are teaching these kids and bringing these kids through, to understand that, yes, you've got to be part of the team. And yes, you've got to, your end product's hugely important in that. But you can be that technical guy who can keep the ball together. When you see Modric, when you see Hazard, De Bruyne, those people, Rob, it's almost like the ball's attached to them. It's almost like they go round the pitch and it's, give it here. You've got a problem, give it to me. I'll keep it.
They're high pressing us. Give me the ball. I'll get out of trouble. We'll combine. Yeah. And that's going to pull back the press. I mean, it's just so important. And I want to follow on that, and I totally agree. Ruben Loftus-Cheek played in this game, and I thought he was excellent. I think that's very encouraging for a little bit like you're
and
talking about.
He's good size, isn't he?
He's good size, but he's got real good ability. He dribbled. He got in behind a couple of times. That encouraged me a lot. He's very different to Dele Alli and Lingard. Very different. And I didn't know what the midfield balance with both of those two guys, the runners, wasn't quite right. And I did think about whether Loftus-Cheek with one, Lingard or Dele with Henderson Holder might be a better balance. I just thought he played really well. And that encouraged me, like, that's we need these guys that can play, can dribble, got a little feint, got a little step over. So
it's
I
really
thought
good
he
point,
was
you know, because remember when we were last in England and Mark Bright's a good old friend of mine and he works very closely with Steve Parish at Crystal Palace. We ended up having a cup of tea one evening and he was just talking about a few players and he said, Loftus-Cheek, by the way, he said, is a proper player. He said, you know, the only thing he's lacking? He said, his games. He said, he needs game time. He needs to, you know, to learn some how to get through games and playing games. But he said, he's got it all, by the way. And I was a bit like, well, yeah, I get you. And obviously, I totally respect his view. But I said, I'm probably seeing that yet. And he said, I'm telling you, if he plays enough games, if he gets 50, 75 games under his belt, you'll see a different player.
Which follows on what, follows on the point
you're making.
Yeah, and young England players, do they get enough time at the big clubs in the Premier League? That's a concern. It's all right winning the 17s, under 19s, under 20 tournaments. Are they playing in a major league? And some of them might have to go on loan in different countries to help their development, because that's the worry, isn't it? That's the worry.
Absolutely. Yeah. That might be the way forward. But I think in summary, a really progressive and an important World Cup for England. You'd have to say it was successful, considering where they were in against Iceland in Euros not only 2 years ago, but you know, still plenty of work to do. We'll turn to the awards, Rob, because I know we want to get there. And listen, what an honour it must be for Harry Kane to finish top of the pile. 6 goals, Golden Boot winner. Ties up that recognition with Gary Lineker. It almost feels a little bit, and I may be wrong, it's a great honour, but something feels a little bit awkward that Kane's won this when push came to shove, he was a little bit disappointed in the big games that were required to go the step further.
Yeah, I mean, in all the knockout games, so the 4 games after the group stage, he scored a goal, one penalty against Colombia. Yeah. And in those other games, you know, that's when you want your captain, your star, so-called, you know, top world-class striker to make a difference. And it's a little disappointing. I mean, 5 goals came against Tunisia and Panama, 5 of the 6, and 3 penalties, one off the heel that he didn't know anything about, and a close-range header and a tap-in. So I'm a little bit torn, Rob.
We shouldn't. 6 goals is 6 goals. It's 6 goals. That Golden Boot, and maybe in time, as years go on, people forget that some of that, and he's a Golden Boot winner. And congratulations, and it was brilliant for him. But I think we're both sort of coming from the same place or feel the same thing. Just one goal in one of those important matches would have just changed the outlook of the award for Kane.
Yeah. Yeah, he just, you know, I think we all wanted him to score a couple of goals. Yeah. It was like, wow, that's what we've seen him do in the Premier League, where he just ducks inside, he bends it with his left foot into the top corner, or he makes a great run, a brilliant header. You know, stuff that we see him in his domestic league and his comfortable, you know, it feels funny, doesn't it? It feels funny, like, wow, Golden Boot, brilliant. There's no question, you are flipping the number 9 in the world. It's just, it feels a little bit difficult to say that, given... Yeah. What we've seen, but let's like you said, he's in the team. He takes the penalties. He's in the right place for the tap-ins. You know, full credit. I mean, he's finished above some real great players there, and some of the number nines that you might think are world-class top guys didn't have a good tournament. So he deserves absolutely to be considered one of the best number nines in the world now. But that was the first one, wasn't it, in terms of the trophies?
Yeah, Golden Ball winner.
Golden Ball.
Luka Modric.
Love it.
Yeah, no problem with that.
No problem whatsoever. Brilliant, brilliant player throughout in difficult circumstances. You sound like you've got a bit of a problem with that.
No, not a huge problem. I mean, it's just that we were asked, would I give it to Luka Modric? I think there's one other player in my view that takes him all the way. And based on that the team won the competition... I'd go for N'Golo Kanté. Mm. Well, let me change that. I'd go for the N'Golo Kanté brothers, because there must be more than one of them. I'll go for N'Golo Kanté and another Kanté, because honestly, there was one thing that happened yesterday, Robin. I was watching the game, and it was almost one of those where I had to go back and rewind and make sure I saw. There was a counter-attack situation where France had actually gone forward. Croatia had the ball and were breaking. So it wasn't one of the most cutthroats, but they were breaking to attack the French goal. And the way that football plays now in those situations, certainly as a midfield player, it's almost most difficult thing to just get back towards your own goal and try and stop the attack. And N'Golo Kanté not only ran back, he almost ran quicker than the ball, got behind the ball, got his set position, and then blocked the ball that was played through into Mandzukic. It was just like one of those things, like, I mean, how does this guy do that? How does he continue to do that at pace? Great technicality, great tactical awareness. I mean, it's frightening. And he's probably not the Luka Modric in the possession and the ability and the cleverness of passing and the keenness on the eye. But he didn't offbring something that I just admire so much. And I think it was integral to why France won the World Cup.
And if you, and listen, of course, like, it's tough to argue against this guy. But and also, just think what he's done, Rob, over the last two or three years of his career. Yeah, he's won a Premier League title with Leicester City, which is incredible. So he's one of the star players for that.
They wouldn't win without him.
Absolutely not. He then goes to Chelsea. Mm. He switches to Chelsea. They win the Premier League title in his first season. Yeah. And now he's won a World Cup title with France's national team. That's because he's a special player. Because he's a special player. He can add that incredible value to others around him in his teams. And you're seeing there from those three titles that what he brings is incredibly important. Between those two, absolutely. Mm. I just love watching Modric. I have for a long, long
time. With Modric. Yeah. There was a little spell. Something happened in the game. Sometimes when you watch a game, and it's little things like they were 4-2. I think it was when they were 4-2 down. Started to have a little bit of possession, and France were not sure whether to quite press or not. They were in that kind of uncomfortable sort of last 15-20 minutes period. And a couple of things happened with Modric. Somebody, like, the ball bounced out. He flicked it to one of his teammates. Somebody played a pass, mishit it, and it sort of came in his direction. He controlled it, and it's almost like he just cleans everything up. His mind and his ability, and every weight of pass is in the right space. It's on the right side. It's in the right. And I'm looking. I'm thinking, geez. I mean, that's not luck. That doesn't just happen. This is a guy that's so in tune with things. Even when he's almost like not thinking about it, it just naturally happens for him.
Yeah, I mean, his touch, I mean, I watched the game with my son and some of the balls that were zipped into him, he just stops it plain dead. It's not bouncing. It's on the deck ready for him to play. And at 30, he's 32 years of age, by the way, Rob. He's almost 33 in September. I mean, to have that amount of... I think I've been a little surprised with the fire in his belly. You know, some of the comments he made, the way he plays in tough situations. Flip, you know, wow. What? Apart from his ability and his touch, he's got a massive heart and a very strong mentality as well. Okay,
maybe
Golden...
Maybe that's what bringing back ground. Yeah.
Go on then. Let's move on. Golden Glove winner. Best goalkeeper was given to Belgium's Thibaut Courtois.
Yeah.
No problem with that. I think he's made some great saves for a big guy. He's got down quickly. He's made important saves.
Yeah.
Playing for Belgium.
His reputation
is
a bit good, actually. Lloris, I think, maybe, without the mistake.
Maybe.
Might have looked in there. But, absolutely no problem with Courtois. Young player Young Player Award, no doubt, with Mbappe. Absolutely.
Yeah, we talked about him.
Exceptional.
Perfect.
We've got two goal of the tournament of Moscow, which was quite a big talking point. There was some real quality goals, certainly through the group stages, and then as we got to the latter stages of the competition. I know FIFA ran their own competition. Mm. I think they had a top five of Benjamin Pavard, Nacho in the Portugal-Spain game, Cristiano Ronaldo in that Portugal-Spain game, Philip Coutinho's goal for Brazil and Switzerland, and Lionel Messi's goal in the Nigeria.
Can I add a couple? I think we should add a couple onto that. I think Jesse Lingard's goal against Panama was great. I think Toni Kroos's free kick for Germany against Sweden was great. It's just whichever you fancy. I mean,
I've gone for neither of them either, to be honest.
None of these goals?
None of those goals.
Well played, son. What's your favourite goal?
Goal three, Cristiano Ronaldo's free kick.
Well, that's your favourite.
That's my. In third place, in reverse order, as they do. In second place, Benjamin Pavard, France v Argentina. Lovely bending laser right foot kick. Goal one. Belgium, Nasser Chadli, goal v Japan. Counter attack in the moment of the game. Oh. I thought was a thing of beauty.
Wow.
In a competition where team football has come on top, has ruled, that was. It doesn't get better than that in terms of team.
That's unusual, Rob. I'm surprised because I'm usually the team goal guy. Yeah, no, I love the team goal, but I haven't gone for that.
The Chadli thing was just, I thought. Was it?
Yeah, interesting. Not on the list. Okay. I haven't done a three. Well, I think that the Jesse Lingard will probably be number three.
Okay.
I think the Ronaldo free kick, I just like for the moment, for right at the start of the tournament, for the pressure, for the accuracy, I thought that would be number two, and Benjamin Pavard would be my goal.
The laser beauty, right foot.
The technique, the spin, the accuracy, the top corner, the nature of the game. They were 2-1 down against Argentina, and the comeback was on. It made it 2-2, and like wow, are they going to fold? Are they going to step up? And he stepped up with that moment of quality that for me was the best goal and one of the moments of the tournament. So I would go for Pavard. France versus Argentina as my number one goal of the tournament.
Absolutely can't argue with that, Rob. Yep. And what we did for our last sort of tweet over the 2018 World Cup, we asked our listeners and fans out there, what was their favourite moment of the 2018 World Cup? We got lots of responses, as you would expect. I'm going to read out three, Rob. I think we picked the sort of best six that we thought. Jeff Sobel, who tweets us a lot, says, Belgium's game-winning goal against Japan, the game I'm talking about. Honest to goodness, the instant Courtois released the ball. I said they're going to win this game right here. So he read that one, Jeff Sobel. Man Van Swarthos said Croatia and Denmark shootout, just all the drama involved in there and Croatia finally getting through. And MH Nathanson said Harry Kane pounding the pitch with pure joy after England's win on penalties, a moment that exercised all the demons of the past, encapsulated the mood of the nation, gobsmacked by the happiness and the sense of possibilities for England.
Yeah, just a few more. Engo Zulu tweets us to say, De Bruyne's a vicious strike against Brazil. J.E.'s one tweets us to say, Cruz's last second spot kick against Sweden. We've talked about that. That should have been impossible. World-class player coming through with a world-class moment. Mm. And Antonio simply says, all of it. So, I mean, there was, to be fair, Rob, there were a lot of brilliant moments in a brilliant World Cup.
And you forget some through group stages and things, don't you? You know, these little moments.
It was a phenomenal tournament of moments, of comebacks, of drama. I mean, it really was. I think, in terms of my favourite moment, and I think, I guess there's a little bit of bias here, Rob. The England penalty shootout victory and the Gareth Southgate explosion of emotion is my favourite moment. I mean, it's moments like that that stuff just gets bigger than football for me. I mean, Gareth is a kind of a very mild, measured, quiet, thoughtful guy, and yet you see there that within that very popular waistcoat we saw lots of, there's a massive heart that's pounding to the beat of this game and in this job and in this tournament and in that penalty shootout. So I think that has to be my favourite moment of England finally winning a blimmin' World Cup penalty shootout.
As ever, I've had to go for two, and my first one, Rob, is 5 minutes into the England-Croatia semi-final, Kieran Trippier bending a ball over the wall.
Beautiful, wasn't it?
And for a moment, Rob, and the scenes at Hyde Park, and you saw the scenes all over England.
Yeah.
The thought of England being in a World Cup final just absolutely put hairs on the back of my neck where we're like, geez, this is going to happen.
This is going to happen.
I'm going to see a World Cup final with England in. That's right up there.
But that's a
great
moment.
I've got to be honest. The most dramatic moment of this World Cup, and because of the man, because of the situation, because of where we are,
I think
Cristiano Ronaldo stands over a free kick. He pulls his shorts up. He ripples his muscles. He looks down the camera like $1 million. He bends a ball over the wall in the top corner for the last minute for a hat-trick goal. It's like that, against Rob, Spain. Is what World Cup football is all. That's what kids watch it for. That's why he's a hero. That's why he's a star. That's why that this drama is like nothing else in TV and in life. And that was just for me like that. That's genius. That's football. Genius, just right there. And he had the world watching, he had billions, he knew he had billions of people watching, and it was like an actor delivering the line or whatever. He was just like bang on the money.
Yeah, it was. When you first started there, Rob, I thought you were going to go with Diego Maradona as dad's watching Argentina.
Diego's up there, but I couldn't find an award for him.
What a World Cup! It's been
any
a joy
final takeaways,
to watch
Rob? As we wrap up and start to think about having a quick break before domestic leagues, what's your takeaway from it?
The best World Cup I've seen, I think. You know, whether you people might want the big Brazils and Argentinas and Italys and stuff in those final stages, I just think it was an amazing World Cup. I think Russia maybe was underestimated as a host. You know, whether it could be executed and whether the football and all the travel and everything else. And it's great to see the social media, isn't it? Some of the guys from Fox that cover the event and the travel. I mean, and the food they ate. I mean, I know what it's like. We've both worked on World Cups. But I just think the Russia hosted a great tournament. And I think it's, even though, of course, we're in the US here and the US weren't in it, there's a lot of people that live around me and people that I've spoke to that have been absolutely enthralled by the tournament, no matter who was in it, the games. And I think that's got to be a great sign, particularly as 2026 is coming to the US and Canada and Mexico, the World Cup, which have been incredibly amazing to experience. It's just of good moments, Rob, of England and what they did in it. Some of the goals, some of the games, some of the comebacks, lots of goals. No, I mean, even the final 4-2, the most goals since 1966 when England won it. I mean, it was just a brilliant tournament. It's been a joy to watch it. And it's like one of those where you're waiting for the next game. And then in game days when there was days off, I'm watching other games just to kind of catch up properly.
You didn't want days off, actually, did you? Let's get the football back.
Yeah. It was brilliant. Loved it.
Yeah, I'm with you, mate. For me, of those I've watched, I talked about Argentina 78 being something that was special, probably at my age. But this one's up there and pushing. And I just thought it was a time to show that football evolves all over the world, Rob. When you look at some of the teams in there, and that nothing stands still. There's no time for arrogance, complacency. You know, tiki-taka football that maybe once was dominating football. Things move on, the game evolves. Yeah.
And players move on, Rob. We saw the Messi and Ronaldo and even Neymar.
The superstar footballers,
guarantee
you nothing, Rob. And it kind of showed me that they can't get it done on their own anymore. No. Those superstar players can't put teams on their back anymore. Teams are better. It's about team spirit. It's about harmony. It gives hope to all other nations out there, as you say. Teams like the US, Italy, and Holland, who didn't make this one, you can be sure the next time around that they're going to be even more indebted to it. And for England, Rob, I think it's given hope back to the country that like to believe they gave the world football. That, you know, I said someone didn't quite come home. We kind of sort of ended up at the neighbour's house, really, but we were close. And at some point, hopefully, one day in our lifetime, we can see it come home. But now, brilliant tournament, mate. It's been a great watch. We'll catch our breath because I've got to tell you, my friend, in 24 days' time,
blimey,
it will
really?
Be the end of the transfer window.
The deadline's
basically
changed.
Means that, that's Thursday, August the 9th. That will be the deadline day. It closes that evening. And 24 hours later, the Premier League season will kick off and we'll be looking at Manchester United v Leicester City. That's Friday, August the 10th. So get a little bit of rest, mate. That's it from us.
Yep.
We, as ever, want to hear from our listeners. Firstly, we would love you to rate and review the show by downloading the Two Robbies on Apple Podcasts. Tell us what we like and where we can improve. So the day belongs to France. The congratulations belong to France, Didier Deschamps and his men getting the job done. So it just leaves us time to say Vive la France, allez les bleus. Celebrations going crazy on the Champs-Élysées. I'm Earl, he's Musto, we're the Two Robbies. Thanks for listening and au revoir.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.